Good morning. The markets are moving, and so are you. From the BizNews studios in Hermanus, this is BizNews Daybreak for Tuesday, the 2nd of December, 2025. I'm Alec Hogg. Here's the context you need to win the day. Not much happening on international markets last night. Well, as far as price movements are concerned, the S&P 500 was down 0.5%. The Dow down by just under 1%, the Nasdaq a third of a percent lower, and in London earlier, the FTSE was down by 0.25%. But lots happening on the corporate side in New York. Announcements coming through last night that Netflix is moving into traditional movies, or so it may appear. Netflix has made a bid for Warner Brothers. Also in the news as far as the corporates are concerned, Amazon, Apple, and Nvidia. Here are our partners at Bloomberg.
Netflix has made a mostly cash offer for Warner Brothers Discovery in a second round of bidding. We are told Netflix is working on a bridge loan that totals tens of billions of dollars. Here is Bloomberg's Chris Palmieri.
Yeah, we definitely are hearing that they're edging a little bit closer to that $30 number, depending on how you value things. Big surprise here that we reported was that the Netflix offer is mostly cash, because Netflix's stock has been doing terrific in recent years. A lot of people expected them to use that as the currency, and apparently they feel more confident paying cash.
That was Bloomberg's Chris Palmieri. Now, Paramount, Skydance, and Comcast are also making bids, and we are told their bankers worked on improved offers over the Thanksgiving weekend. Now, Netflix and Comcast are only interested in the Warner Brothers Studio and the HBO Max streaming service. By the way, these offers are binding, and that means the board of Warner Brothers is in a position to sign off on a deal quickly if its goals are met. Amazon is testing a program in both Philadelphia and its hometown of Seattle. The goal is to make deliveries on hundreds of thousands of items within 30 minutes. More from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
Those household items include some fresh groceries and over-the-counter medicines. The e-commerce company says it will use specialized smaller facilities for the deliveries. The fee will start at $13.99, discounted to $3.99 for Prime members. Amazon has a long history of experimenting with quick delivery from specialized urban facilities stocked with inventory similar to the products sold by convenience stores and pharmacies. In New York, Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Radio.
The head of Apple's artificial intelligence unit is stepping down. The company says John Giandrea is exiting his job as senior VP of machine learning and AI strategy. He will leave the company entirely in the spring after a period of transition. Nvidia is investing $2 billion in the chip design software maker Synopsys. This is part of a broader engineering and design tie-up aimed at infusing Nvidia's AI computing technology into more industries. Now, these companies will deploy AI agents and work on joint marketing. Here is Bloomberg's Ed Ludlow.
Synopsys makes the software by which chips are designed but also validated. So before you send a chip through the fab to be manufactured, you want to know that that design works. And that's a big part of what Synopsys does with all kinds of tech companies. And so part of the interpretation of why is Nvidia doing this is it's a sales channel, because Synopsys is basically saying, imagine how good our software would be if it was underpinned by Nvidia's GPUs and NVIDIA's catalog of software.
Bloomberg's Ed Ludlow there. Shares in NVIDIA were up today by 1.6%. U.S. Special Envoy Steve Witkoff, together with President Trump's son-in-law Jared Kushner, are set to be in Moscow this week to iron out a peace deal to end Russia's war in Ukraine. Now, yesterday, American and Ukrainian officials met in Florida. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio said talks were productive, but he said more work needs to be done. We got some perspective from retired Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vidman.
I've never seen anything quite so chaotic as this iterative process to attempt a peace negotiation. Sometimes it looks reminiscent of shuttle diplomacy. You got some statesmen going between Moscow and Kiev or other capitals. But what you don't have, and what's evident and present in this one, is you don't have folks that have no competence negotiating, folks that don't actually have a formal role in government, like Jared Kushner.
That was retired Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vidman. Also today, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky rallied European support in Paris as he met with French President Emmanuel Macron. Zelensky said there are improvements in the proposal, although there are still tough issues that have to be worked out with Washington.
Well, you're all updated now on the international front. Let's have a look at what's happening here at home. Locally, we had two of our top 100 companies reporting yesterday. These were trading updates from both of them. Standard Bank maintained its 2025 guidance despite a shifting economic landscape. In a trading statement for the 10 months to the end of October, remember, Standard Bank has a December year-end, Africa's largest lender confirmed it's on track for mid to high single-digit revenue growth and return on equity of between 17 and 20%. That is juicy in global terms. While a cumulative 100 basis point rate cut from the South African Reserve Bank this year, the most recent of those coming just, last month in November, it's pressurized interest income, net interest income, which is what the banks look at for, it's their margins, their profit margins. And despite this, though, Standard Bank successfully offset this through robust growth in investment banking and higher transaction volumes. Crucially, retail credit impairments, that's bad debts, have fallen, signaling easing financial pressure on South African consumers. Head along to the South African share prices page on biznews.com, where you'll see that the market expected this good news from Standard Bank. Its share price was little changed yesterday, down 0.25% in a generally firmer JSE. The shares are up 18% year to date. And the other trading update from a top 100 company was from Hyprop, this time for the 4 months to October the 31st. They're giving you a little bit of an insight on the interims. It was robust. The group's South African portfolio saw turnover rise just over 5%, and trading density jumped 8.5%, while vacancies dropped to just 3.2%. They were aided by the launch of Africa's first Walmart at the Hyprop Clearwater Mall. The group's East European portfolio remains the star performer. It has zero vacancies. Not bad, eh? Supported by a healthy balance sheet, Hyprop has maintained its full-year guidance, targeting between 10 and 12% growth in distributable income per share. The market, however, expected the news. The Hyprop share price was down just under 1% yesterday. The stock has done well this year, having risen by a touch under 20% since January the 1st. South Africa's coastal neighbors, Namibia and Mozambique, have attracted over $100 billion in oil and gas investments. We, however, nothing or very little. Total were involved for a while. They did quite a lot of exploration, found some exciting opportunities off the Southern Cape coast. But then there were disagreements with the government and, well, off they went into the far horizon, not to return, not yet. Anyway, it's interesting that the French group Total have invested heavily in both Mozambique and Namibia, who are steaming ahead. Some good news is that the PIC, the Public Investment Commissioners, announced last week that it has a new gas investment policy. That means that it wants to find investments in this sector. And also the private sector, 22 organizations who consume a lot of gas, these are industrial companies, have put together a joint bulk buying organization that they call Gas Hub. I spoke to Gas Hub's director, Jaco Himan.
Gas Hub is born out of the market development that are currently taking place in South Africa with regards to natural gas. Traditionally, there's been a single supplier, Sasol, supplying the market, of course, from Mozambique quite successfully over the last 20 years. But that resource is now depleting. In fact, it's already in decline. So Sasol indicated that they will stop supplying natural gas on June 2028. There will be a couple of months in which they will substitute supplies through synthetic gas, but then it stops in June 30. So we got to find alternatives. This vehicle, this aggregator vehicle, as we call it, is really designed as a marketplace to, number one, secure gas molecules, develop the infrastructure, but then continue supplying on a basis to industry going forward.
Between those 22 founding members, who's produce anything from food to glass, they consume the equivalent of 65 million of the waist-high gas canisters. With Sasol's Mozambique deposit, which is to the south of the country, not to be confused with that huge deposit in the far north of Mozambique, 3,000 kilometers virtually away, with that one running out, the companies in South Africa face massive pressures. Because if they were to import the gas, which is through LNG, almost like an ice block, if you like, of gas, liquefied gas, it would cost double what they're paying at the moment. South Africa has some of the best gas deposits in the world, but we haven't been able to exploit these while our neighbors are powering ahead. Herman explains why.
Why is Namibia so far advanced rather than us? I think, number one, it's because of the regulatory environment, the difference in regulatory environments. We're currently sitting with a very unique set of, judicial mechanics or mechanisms, which essentially means that anyone can stop these significant catalytic projects for the South African economy by virtue of the Act, the Constitution, et cetera, et cetera. And these processes get sort of stopped from an environmental perspective on a regular basis, and the projects are set back 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, you know, whatever it takes. Now, there's nothing wrong in these challenges. We're not saying that anyone should not challenge it. But what is missing in the judicial system in South Africa is actually a type of technical and economic and environmental tribunal that can balance out these considerations in an informative and knowledgeable manner and rational manner to say this project is allowed rather than this one. All right. So what is happening at the moment is these mega projects with mega potential offshore are actually stopped by, you know, I would almost say elementary elements around consultation. All right. You know, you didn't publish a consultation process in a particular newspaper in a particular language, all right? So now the whole project stops, all right? And we are actually shooting ourselves in the foot economically.
So the potential is enormous. The geology on the South African coast below the Orange River Basin is identical to that just to the north of it, where the Namibians are finding so much exciting potential. With deposits to rival the best in the world, why is it that we aren't exploiting this natural resource?
You know, if you open the policy documents today, there's 18 gigawatts of gas to power lined up towards the end of next decade, 6 before the end of this decade, which is significant on the demand side. Industry needs gas. Sasol needs gas. So these are big, big demand pockets. We cannot sustain the economy on LNG. It is expensive. The importance then comes in on the West Coast. And the West Coast gas, in our opinion, is the medium-term roadmap for South Africa. Without a doubt, we need to develop and monetize those resources with speed. Why do we think of Namibia first? Of course, because they are much further down the track. In fact, they are talking about first gas probably around about 2033, all right, which is literally around the corner. We are looking at ways to, or the feasibility actually, we are considering the feasibility of landing that gas, for example, in Sasolburg. In other words, a West Coast Sasolburg type pipeline that also spurs down to Cape Town. Cape Town, Saldanha, Ankerlich, all these places got huge demand for gas. So the West Coast gas is a critical, critical economic play for industry. In fact, we see it very similar to the reindustrialization of the smelting sector. Even the mining sector can leverage certainly industry. The power sector, you know, will have a whole set of different economics because currently the policy documents is based on $15 gas. We think it is feasible to land gas in Sasselburg between $6 and $8. That is a significant shift. It is a significant shift. So West Coast gas is absolutely critical. Two plays. The midstream, in other words, how do you connect demand with supply, that pipelines, in other words, and then the upstream play. We will see first gas flow under this sort of, let's call it hypothesis, we will see first gas flow from Namibia, not South Africa, all right? But you got to bring in South Africa potential at some point.
Good news, if we can get our act together on that one. Moving on to Ukraine now, why does peace matter to us? It's far away, doesn't seem to have any impact, but actually, according to our partners at Bloomberg, it'll affect the oil price, and that will have an impact on everyone's pocket.
If we do see sanctions lifted on Russia, what are the supply implications?
Well, there is, on one hand, there is, you know, our hope that, of course, everybody would like to see, maybe not everybody, but most of us would like to see this war ending. But let me keep it maybe close to the market realities and leave the politics on the side, because that is by itself a very complicated scene. But in terms of impact on energy markets, on oil market in particular, but there's also the impact on gas markets. But when it comes to oil, I think that would lift a little bit, and that would actually ease the geopolitical risk premium, which is still there in the market today. I don't think we're going to see a sudden flood of oil in the market, because Russian oil never left the market. It has been simply redirected. So we should not expect to see an additional sudden big flow of oil trade. However, we're going to see lower risk premium. We're going to see, because of there is less uncertainty about where Russian gas is going to go, about the dark fleet, about the sanctions, but also less attacks on the energy infrastructure on both sides of the equation, on the Russian side and the Ukrainian side. That said, I don't think sanctions can be lifted immediately overnight. It's a little bit more complicated, and that by itself is going to be a rather slower process. But on balance, it is positive news for global consumers when it comes to having a peace deal in one of the most important regions for oil trade in terms of consumption and exports as well.
The collapse in service delivery has spawned lots of new criminal enterprises. But this is one that was new to me. It's emerged in Gauteng. These are waste lords. And my colleague, Chris Stain, spoke to Keith Elliott, who's director of the Kaya Sands Burning Wasteland Community Forum. She asked him where the corruption was coming from.
So, Chris, I can only tell you anecdotally that that we've been approached by parties in the past, and the approach has been, if you come up with 100,000 rand, we're quite sure that this problem can go away. So that's an indication, at least, that at some level there may be political involvement or people in politics who are involved in this. We also know that the City of Johannesburg's JNPD vehicles regularly patrol the area. I have personally observed them stopping vehicles clearly laden with waste that's going to the dump. The JNPD officer approaches the vehicle. There's an exchange of documents, and if I want to be charitable, I'm going to tell you that maybe the license was being checked, but you know, one can deduce whatever one wants from seeing that interaction. The truck then just goes on its way, does its dumping, and leaves the area. So that's stuff that I have certainly observed myself. So whether there's only petty corruption at the level of JNPD officers, or whether there is higher level corruption, we can only speculate, and the viewers can make their own deductions from what I've described and seen and heard and experienced myself.
And now you have the edge. For the full interviews and the details behind these stories, head over to biznews.com. I'm Alec Hogg. Thank you for starting your morning with us. Now go and seize the day.